Yes, it's the Simpleton Podcast, proudly brought to you by Ringwood Scaffolding. Return to render. And this week we've got another packed full of entertainment, analysis and in-depth insight into the world around us. My name is Daniel James from Melbourne, Australia, and joining me, as always, is Scott Gall from...
Scott Gall!
That's right, yes, crowd applause. Scott Gall from Berlin, Germany. How are you, Scott?
Daniel. Might I say I am swell, and it is my pleasure to be in the company of fine gentlemen such as yourself, not to mention the hundreds of thousands of listeners. It's nice to be in your presence as well.
You're overstating that massively, Scott. Don't want to pull you up this early, but don't want to pull you up. I estimate, and it's only an estimate, but I estimate that we have around 3,000 subscribers, so well short of the hundreds of thousands that you just mentioned.
You don't want to pull me up, Daniel, you said. Unfortunately, I can't return the favor to you. In your opening little blurb there, you said, yes, another packed full. Packed full, in this case, would serve as an adjective which would require a noun somewhere afterward in the sentence, and a noun was sadly lacking from your sentence. So it sounded a little incomplete, but that aside, Daniel.
If you just want to come across as a pompous asshole, you're doing a very good job of it, Scott. By the way, you haven't been drinking, have you?
No.
Okay.
Have you?
Well, just water and fruit juice.
Pretty much the same on this side of the planet as well, Daniel.
Shall we get into the world wrap up, Scott?
We shall get into the world wrap-up, Daniel. Or the roundup.
Right.
Gotta be consistent.
Yes, it's the roundup, the world roundup.
Consistency, Daniel.
Yes, I know. What have you got for us this week, Scotty?
Well, Danny boy, Danny J. What I have
just get on with it, knackers.
Yeah, no, that's yeah. I hear ya. Daniel, listeners, something over the last couple of weeks has caught my eye and has somewhat irked me. Now, I don't want to get into the complicated and tragic situation that has unfolded in Syria, and I am not about to endorse the government of that country or their Western-backed opposition, both of whom have been accused of horrendous and massive atrocities. What I do want to discuss here is France, which has recently been threatening to take direct military action against the Syrian government, which, love it or hate it, does preside over a vast and well-trained, well-armed military. Imagine this. The animal world decides to appoint a security council, appointing 5 different animals to permanent membership on that council. One of the animals chosen is a great white shark. A saltwater crocodile is another. There are also a lion and a tiger on the council. The 5th member is a bantam rooster. Now, let's just for a moment forget about the logistical difficulties about getting those 5 together at the same table. The real question, Daniel and listeners, is this. Just what the blazers is France. What the blazers is France.
There you go with the language again. Can you just pull up a little bit, Scott, and continue with your report? Thank you.
This is my question. What is France doing on the UN Security Council? Insight here. After Nazi Germany was finally defeated in World War II, Berlin was divided up into 4 sectors, each to be controlled by a victorious power. One was the Soviet Union, undoubtedly the country most responsible for defeating Nazi Germany in the Second World War. Two other countries were Britain and the USA, who also played significant roles. The 4th victorious power to get a sector of that city was France, who was pretty much invaded, routed, and completely conquered by the Nazis well inside of 6 weeks. Daniel, how did they slime their way into victorious power status? And shut up. It's a rhetorical question.
No. Have you ever tried their food? It's sensational.
I'll have to take your word for that. In 1946, the UN Security Council held its first session with the aforementioned victorious powers plus China being represented, the makeup of the council today is pretty much the same, though, of course, the Soviet Union now goes by the name Russia and is significantly smaller. And there are also 10 temporary non-veto-wielding members. To sum up, Daniel and listeners, I continue to be flabbergasted by the presence of France, the world's bantam rooster with chest puffed out, on a Security Council that otherwise does have genuine world powers on it. I recently spoke with Klaufis, our new international relations expert, who we briefly introduced last week, and this is what he had to say on the issue. Klaufis,
yeah,
I thank you for agreeing to speak with me.
I thank you for agreeing to speak with me.
Yes. Klaufis, today we'll be talking a little bit about France and UN Security Council. Now, Klaufis, there are currently 5 permanent nations on the UN Security Council.
Really?
Yes. These are supposed to be the world's big boys, so to speak.
Yeah, mate, I've heard that before.
So why then is France one of them?
Yeah, mate, that's a good question. What do you think?
I'm asking you why. How did France get on there, and why is France on there?
I don't know, mate. Lol.
Okay. Just to put this into perspective for you, Klaufis.
Yeah, mate.
There are 5 there. America, which was a great power, going south rapidly now. Was a great power. I can understand why it was put there. Russia, it's a power, a world power. China, the rising superpower.
That's where Arnold Schwarzenegger's from. I've seen that one movie. I think it was called Red Scorpion or something. Red Heat, mate. Jeez, mate, he smashed them, mate.
China, the rising superpower of the world. Yes, I understand that. England was a great power. I can see why it's one of the 5. France. But why France? Klaufis.
I don't know, mate. You know, they got some pretty famous people like Napoleon and Shakespeare and Adolf Hitler and that. So I'd say that might be why.
Oh, fair enough, Klaufis. Moving on to the next question.
Okay, mate. Well,
yeah, now if Germany comes...
You're in charge.
Yes. If Germany comes to the fore of Europe, pretty much becomes the paymaster of Europe, the center of Europe, which a lot of people suspect, in effect reviving the spirit of Charlemagne, of course, the Franco-German emperor of the Holy Roman Empire back 600 or 700 years. If that happens again, Klaufis, where do you see France fitting into this, if not filling the role of Germany's maid or maiden?
Mate, you know, I don't have a lot upstairs, but I've got a heart of gold, mate. I've heard that said about myself quite a bit, usually by myself. And to tell you the truth, mate, as far as I understand, France is in Europe.
Yes.
So I'd say that's where it fits in, mate.
Very good. Very good, Klaufis. You're talking geography there. On a geopolitical level, if this reformed Holy Roman Empire with Germany front and center is reformed, as some people suspect, where do you see France fitting into that on a geopolitical level?
Mate, fucked if I'd know. Lol.
We'll go on to the next question.
Yeah, sure, mate. It's, you know, up to you.
If Germany comes to the fore of Europe,
yep,
reviving the spirit of Charlemagne and
yep,
and in thus being front and center of a revived Holy Roman Empire,
yep,
where do you see France fitting into all of this, if not filling the role of Germany's maiden?
Mate, fucked if I'd know, mate, but I tell you one thing, mate. I might not have a whole lot upstairs, but I got a heart of gold, mate.
The question, can you please address the question, Klaufis?
Mate, I would address it, but to be honest, I don't have a bloody clue, mate. It was a pretty difficult question, all that stuff about Roman Polanski and that, mate. No idea what you're talking about there. Do you think you're some kind of smart ass or something, huh? You think you're tough, mate? You wanna go, mate?
We'll move on to the next question.
Yeah, you better move on.
Of the five nations on the council, there are some that are straddled with serious issues and ongoing human rights violations that are rooted in a lack of real democracy. Then, of course, there are also Russia and China, who are also nothing flash in this regard. What are your thoughts on the members of the council, Klaufis?
Sorry, what council is this, mate? Is this the Strathbogie Council?
The UN Security Council.
Sorry, mate, who's the UN again?
We'll move on to the next question.
You asked the question, mate. I just wanted... to be honest, mate, you know, I'm not following 100% what you're asking me in that, but... So if you could just explain once again what the UN is.
It stands for the United Nations. And we're talking about the UN.
Oh,
Security.
UN, mate. I thought it was some kind of word like UN, like, I don't know, Y-U-U-E-N or something, mate. But you mean the letters UN, mate. Like, to be honest, I always thought it was called the UN, mate. But I get what you mean now.
France has of late been throwing around military threats against the nation of Syria, rightly or wrongly. I'm not commenting or being partisan here, but it's been doing it pretty much knowing that it's safe to do to throw these threats around from within the ranks of its bigger allies. Empty bluster, Klaufis?
Mate, there's always some kind of bloke, you know. So, you know, the guy down the pub, and he's got his mates and that with him. And he might, you know, call you a poof or something, and you think, yeah, you'll keep tough guy. And then you see him again, mate, maybe a year or two later, and he's walking with his kids or something, mate. So you just wait, and you come up behind him, and BAM! You smash him in the back of the head, mate. And then in front of his kids, you BAM! And smash and kick his stupid head in, mate.
Okay. Klaufis, does the world need a UN Security Council? Let alone a UN.
Mate, you know, I might not have a lot upstairs, but I got a heart of gold, mate. So, it's, you know, frills the spills, mate. Some for everyone, mate.
That's not at all addressing the question.
Nah.
Does...
Mate, I got one word for you, mate. Yep. Fuck you.
Who should have the say over military commitments? Who should have the final say on whether they go ahead
mate,
or not?
Mate, you had the final say, mate, and that's me, mate. I take them all on, mate. They all come up to me, mate. Hey, Klaufis, you want to go, mate? I say, nah, mate, I don't want any trouble. And they turn around and bang, mate, you're down, mate. So, yeah.
It seems a big part of... Actually, I don't want to be drawn on that, Klaufis. I thank you for your time, Klaufis.
Thank you for your time, Klaufis.
Some pretty interesting insights there from Klaufis. Must say we can't afford to pay him all that much, but I think it's fair to say that we've got our value for money, Scott.
You've summed that up very well, Daniel. Value for money is what we've got from the Seaman. He sometimes refers to himself in the third person as the Seaman.
That's good. We like things informal here in the Simpleton.
We do. Look, he's got a lot to say.
Yeah.
No one can deny that. He has a lot to say.
Yeah, look, I look forward to his semi-regular reports into the future, Scott. Scott, let's just move right on to world sport. Scott, this is somewhat of a rarity these days. It's something that I don't want to do on a regular basis. But what have you got for us this week?
It's back, baby. Oh, it's back. Yes.
Yes. Well, you're very excited, obviously.
I'm excited. You let the cat out of the bag. I wanted to surprise the listeners. You've let the cat out of the bag a few seconds early. It's back with the welcome infusion of sponsorship dollars that Daniel announced last week. World Sport is back. It won't be back every week, but every now and again, It will be back.
Let's just not get ahead of ourselves. Let's just see what the quality of this week's sports report is like. And if it does okay, we may consider broadcasting it in the future. But if it's the same quality as every other previous World Sport Report, then this could be very well the last time you hear of it. So, Scott, proceed.
First of all, Daniel, kudos to you. Kudos. You know, I've given you a hard time about the... Let's face it, you did a poor job for quite a while. It took quite a while to get a sponsor on board. Last week, you got two on board. I criticize you. But with the shoe on the other foot, with some positive news on that front, I have to give you kudos, Daniel. So, good stuff.
Well, thank you.
Sport. Sport.
Yes, sport.
Sport. Last night. Sport.
Yes, sport. Shall we proceed?
Last night, Germany took on the Faroe Islands, otherwise known as the Faroe Islands, in its first game of the qualifications phase for the 2014 Soccer World Cup, winning the game 3-0. Soccer's primitive, isn't it? I mean, you primitives in Australia, USA, call it soccer. Those of us in Europe like to call it football, but that's another issue altogether.
Showing your true colours as per usual. You're now a European, aren't you, Scott? You don't call yourself an Australian anymore, do you?
The results were seemingly never in doubt, pitting the world's second-ranked team against the team ranked 155th, and was played in a stadium in Hanover that has more seats than the Faroe Islands have people. Wasn't full. The stadium had about 30,000 in it. That's another issue. Sport as life in general, Daniel, often provides for such David and Goliath type contests, though none come immediately to mind. And as cute and quaint as it may seem, however, it just doesn't cut it with me. A contest has to be a contest, and quite frankly, a game between a country of 80 million people and a country of less than 50,000, as was the case last night in that game, is not a real contest. So this is what I propose. Football can easily overcome the unfair nature of such contests, and here's how. I suggest, and if anyone from FIFA is listening to this podcast,
they
feel free
be.
To use it.
They won't be.
Feel free to use this. My suggestion is this, that population ratios come into play. For example, if a country of 20 million plays against a country of 10 million, and the country of 10 million scores a goal, then the country of 20 million has to score two goals to draw level based on the population ratio. But don't get me wrong here. If the country with the lower population fails to score at all, then you can't. That's no basis to win. Then the other team wins if they score. But if the team with the lower population does score once, then the population ratio comes into play. It makes sense. But once the team... Oh, that's what... Sorry, I'm reading from the sheet. I was about to repeat myself. So you understand what I mean with this, Daniel?
I understand the basic naive premise that you're basing all this on, Scott. While you've been ranting like a drunken sailor in a, you know, disused brothel... I have been doing a little bit of arithmetic. Now, you say the Faroe Islands has a population of some 50,000 people.
Yes.
And Germany has a population of, you know, around about 80 million people.
Yes.
Despite the best attempts of the US and the Russians in the Second World War. That would mean in using the formula that you've come up with, that to beat the Faroe Islands, Germany would have to approximately score 1,600 goals in the game.
Which that's if the Faroe Islands kicks a goal. That's if they kick a goal.
Oh, yeah. No, we should put that preface on it.
Yeah.
That would mean that Germany would have to score a goal around every 3 seconds in order to draw level based on the population ratio. Having said that, what would be the number of goals required by China against the Faroe Islands in a similar scenario?
Well, first of all, if they keep the Faroe Islands scoreless, it's a non-issue.
Yeah. But crazy things happen in football, don't they?
Mm,
and
they
it's
do.
Not, it's not unknown for lesser-ranked teams to at least score against quite often the B-list that some of the more predominant soccer nations put in against such competition.
Yes.
Say the Faroe Islands scored, well, just managed to score once, let alone two times. How many goals would China have to score to defeat them under the Gaul formula?
the Gaul formula. You're putting me on the spot, Daniel.
Let's put a name to it. You know, let's own it. Own it.
You said it.
Own it.
Okay, if the Faroe Islands were to score a goal against Germany, as you said, the German team would then need 1,600 goals to draw level. On my calculations, China has about, let me think.
You're not counting them, are you? It's about 1.2 to 1.4 billion people.
Yeah, so about 15 times. If you want to put a figure on it, I wasn't wanting to do this. If you want a figure on it, China has about 15 times the population of Germany.
So 15 times 1,600 goals would be, hang on, let me just get my abacus out. That's the wrong abacus. Right, let's just do this. 1,500 times 1,600. Just be some wanker in the audience, by the way, that would have got this answer already. But, you know, fuck them with the stars. That's that's something like 2.4 million goals.
2.4 million. 1,600.
That's not right, is it? It's 2.4 million goals.
No, it's not. 15 multiplied by 1,000, Daniel. What's that?
Look.
15,000, Daniel. Let's
just agree that it's fucking impossible. It's a stupid formula. The Gaul formula is a stupid formula and that we should not speak any more of it. You've revoked your rights, mister, to do world sports reports in the future. I gave you another chance. You've dropped the ball. You've dropped the baton. You've missed the putt. It's time that we let this whole stupid notion that you know what you're talking about when it comes to world sport, and we just move on to something more cultured. What do you say?
This is Sean Connery, and you're listening to the Shimpleton Podcast.
Look, speaking of things cultured, I think we've got a new segment for the listeners, and this segment looks at the world of cinema. And for this segment, we've decided to name it The Film Review.
Yes. Yes, that was quite melodramatic the way you said The Film Review. But let's move on.
The running sheet.
Yeah, the running sheet. You bamboozled me. Listen, I'm looking at the running sheet now and it says Scott, and then it has my line next to it and it starts with Scott. So am I talking with myself or am I?
You should be used to that.
It says, Scott, you've been out and about the movies this week.
Yeah. I think I know who we're referring to, don't we, Scott?
Yeah. Okay, so I'm not talking with myself or referring to myself in the third person. So I'll replace Scott with Daniel, shall
For
I?
For once, no. Yes, that's right.
Yeah, okay. Daniel, you've been out and about in the world of cinema this week, sampling some, and I believe you have the inaugural Simpleton film review for us.
First of all, I like how you just riff, you know, off the running sheet, you know. Instead of saying, Daniel, you've been out and about at the movies this week, you say, oh, Daniel, I believe you've been out in the world of cinema this week. I mean, it doesn't impress anyone. And in the future, if I was you, I would just stick with the fucking script. But that's right, Scott. This week, I went along to see a French film, The Final Probe, or La Sonde Finale, as it is pronounced in its native tongue. The fifth film from director Jean-Paul Riviera, The Final Probe looks at the dark underbelly of the Parisian patisserie scene. With its endless cast of kooky characters, the film's subplots are as layered as some of the pastries that adorn many of the film's dark and dingy scenes. The film's main character, Alain Dubuffont, Leon Matisse, is a seasoned veteran of the Parisian police pastry and icing investigation unit. We follow him into the seedy patisserie scene as he's on the tail of an elaborate plot to extort the Belgian government out of its national supply of cocoa. It is through Buffon's liaison with the Belgium embassy that he meets Celine Dion, Matilda Crapard, a young and sassy impresari, assisting Buffon with access to the staff and files that he needs to prove his suspicions that the extortion attempt is an inside job. Eventually, Buffon and Dior feelings for each other simmer over, despite de Buffon's suspicions that Dior is in on the plot.
Un entrepreneur aperitif?
Ah oui. Mon chat. Ah oui, merci mon chat.
Hier soir, j'ai la marquise, vous aviez la kitchenette bien coupée.
Ah oui. Oh oui, mon chat. Merci.
Cigarette, Madame Dior.
Oh. Oh oui. Merci, mon chat. Oh.
Elle fait j'adore à cet objet. Il y a Annie Le Paris.
Oh, oh oui. Oh, oh oui, oui. Ah, ah, oh.
Despite all the sugar and icing, The Final Probe is ultimately a dissatisfying tale. Leaning heavily from the 1946 classic The Last Probe, La Dernière Sonde, the wooden performances of both Matisse and Crapard underlie the thinness of the overall plot. Screening at selected cinemas, checked the back of public toilet doors for venues and screening times. 3 stars, Scott. Scott, I think it's time that we moved on to the shout-out.
Daniel, you are again doing the shout-out this week. What have you got for us?
Okay, this week, Scott, I'm giving a shout out to the Coonawarra Scott, are off to what?
Stop. Stop. No.
What? No, what's your problem?
No. You listen to me now.
Burma.
Where did that come from? Stop. You can't hide behind Burma every time. There are limits, Daniel. There are limits. I mean, how is it limitless? Is Burma limitless, Daniel? Is that an excuse that is limitless?
I thought it was in relation to this podcast, Scott.
No, that's awful. And honestly, why is that? Is that a real team?
Of course it's a fucking real team. We do that week in, week out. The Coonawarra.
What are they?
Sorry, I'll say it again. The Coonawarra.
What do they play?
Football.
Who would name their team that? Why?
To make them stand out from the rest, I suppose. Marketing purposes.
Yeah, well, I guess they succeed on that front, making them stand out from the rest. Daniel, I don't know if Burma cuts it here.
Oh, well, you just said it. Oh, Burma cuts it. Look, yeah. I think that was lame, but you know, it doesn't matter. Anyway, look, I'm going to tell you, mate, the pants are going to be dirty on this.
Oh, stop. Listen.
They're a crack team,
Oh, stop it. Now, listen, I'm going to have to pull a France here. I'm going to have to try to assume authority when I really don't have any. I'm going to cancel this.
Okay, for the purposes of team cohesion, I will allow it this week and simply go on to listeners' letters. Scotty! We can't do this episode without him, can we?
No.
Scott, I believe that you have the first letter that you received at the email address contact@thesimpleton.com.au. Would you like to read it out?
I don't think like is the right word. I'll do it.
Okay. Well, be a pro and do it.
Yeah. This one is from Proctor Carpathius of Tamaloo, Northeast Victoria. This is what Proctor writes. You're so tabloid that it makes me sick to my black guts, you little maggots. Jeez. You vermin, you. You revolting little worms, you. I detest your work, and yet I listen to it every week. Like a person too horrified to look upon a scene of carnage, but too morbidly curious to look away, I continue to listen to your dreadful ramblings on a weekly basis, and will continue to do so religiously. And don't tell me not to. Don't tell me not to, or I'll come to you, you maggots, you. I'll come to you, and I'll bleed you. I'll bleed you. Well, thank you, Proctor. Daniel.
That Proctor's an intense guy.
That's one way of putting it.
Very intense. I'm assuming he's got some form of mental illness if he continues to do something that he dislikes week in, week out. But I suppose if you listen to talkback radio, you get people ringing up and abusing the various shock jocks on a daily basis, even though they hate the show.
Which is that common?
It's very common. It's very common. Yeah. You should hear some of the stuff they say. It's like
Daniel, you've got letter two.
Yeah, I've got letter two, Scott. It comes from Rhubarb Dirk from St. Vincent's. Now, St. Vincent, I believe that's in the Caribbean, Scott. Am I correct there?
You are fully correct on that. It's rather amazing.
What's the population there, Scott?
Caribbean?
No, St. Vincent.
St. Vincent, don't know, but I don't think it's much. I believe in all of the Caribbean, there are 26 nation states there.
Yeah, okay. I'll just read the letter out. And Rhubarb writes, I like it, guys. I love it. Thank you very much, Mr. Dirk, for that.
Thank you, Rhubarb.
Yeah, yeah. Okay, so.
You've got the third one.
Yes, I actually
do. Or have I got it?
No, I believe I've got it.
Yes.
This one comes from Hudson Burke from Shill Street in North Melbourne.
Rings a bell.
Yeah, Shill Street does ring a bell, doesn't it?
Oh, yes, it does.
I'm not sure what the deal is there, but anyway. Oh. All right, I'll read it out. I'm the guy that brought parablading to the world. That's who I am. In case you were wondering...
Just stop a moment. Yeah. I'll let you continue in a moment. He's the guy that brought parablading to the world. What's parablading?
Oh, that was a sport back in the late 80s that involved people jumping out of aeroplanes with parachutes while wearing what were they called? Rollerblades.
Rollerblades?
Yeah.
Rollerblades. Rollerblades. That was an extreme sport, was it?
Oh, I would imagine that it wouldn't get much more extreme than that, Scott.
Sorry to interrupt. Continue.
But as sick and rad as that is, I've grown impatient with it. And we'll leave that now to my fans. I didn't know, so must have been a popular sport, I suppose.
Yeah.
I've set myself a new challenge and I'm looking for a sponsor. I plan to dive to the bottom of the Marianas Trench, right, weighed down by a ball and chain attached to my right ankle. When I hit the bottom, and only then, I will then remove my handcuffs and the iron ball, Houdini style, and make my way back to the surface. I'm asking for someone to come good with $2.4 million, not only to cover the logistics, but to help me with some of the hardcore body conditioning and training in holding my breath for at least as Navy divers can. For at least as long as Navy divers can, I'm sorry.
Yeah, okay.
It's a big challenge, but with the money and my never-say-die attitude, I'm going to give it an almighty shake. In return for the money, I will proudly wear sponsors' logos on my clothing when I'm undertaking the stunt. Sick man. Didn't need sick man bit to prove that he's sick. But thank you. Thank you, Hudson Burke. Look, if you want to find a sponsor that whose apparel you can wear while you plummet to your death, by all means, Hudson, good luck to you. But I think you're doomed from the very outset. The pressure alone will kill you. It's something like, is it something like 9-10 kilometers down? There's no human being on the face of the earth. A very, very few species of, no species of fish. Actually, very little or no life exists that deep down. So, look, we're happy to air your letter because of Burma, but we wish you luck, but you're a fool and you're going to die. Well, tonight, do you have anything else for us?
I've got nothing else. Nothing else to say. Well, what about you?
Well, I only to say that we should bring this podcast to a close. And if you want to listen to us or subscribe to our podcast, go to Simpleton. Type in The Simpleton into the search engine and you'll find us. If you want to leave a rating or a ranking, by all means, it doesn't have to be good. Although, you'd have to be a not to leave a good one. Anyway, Scott, do you see anything in the week ahead that we should be on the lookout for?
No.
Okay, neither do I. So, with all of that behind us, goodbye, Scott.
Goodbye, Daniel.